This episode of the Interhoa Uprising is sponsored by you. That is right, you. All of your Patreon donations, PayPal donations, five-star reviews on Apple as well as Spotify. Shoutouts on social media, articles, mentions to your friends and family, IHU merchandise purchases, all make this show possible week in and week out. And for that, we thank you, homies. Welcome to the Interhoa Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one Black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist hoe who lives in New York City, whose pronouns are they, them, she, and her, and who has a little stuffy nose.
But it's the cutest nose ever.
Thank you.
And me, Rodecca, sometimes Rebecca, a fat Black, polyamorous, pansexual, existentialist, femme, whose life is a series of coincidences that somehow landed her here, and pronouns are she, they, yeah.
Burr, 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 burr.
And it's me, Akua, pronouns she and her, your favorite bald baddie mental health therapist demisexual hoe out here in these New York streets.
That was my funk flex bomb. Every episode of the Interhoa Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. This episode, we're talking about the gene-edited Virgin Mary, having the talk with your kids, the plug's response to anti-trans legislation, or that's what we're making it, an analysis of a Missy Elliott throwback, how compulsory romanticism hurts all of us, and much more.
If you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Interhoa Uprising or tweet us at Interhoa Uprising without the G on Twitter. We're also at Interhoa Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook.
Let's hop right into things. Our first segment of the day is Fuck Is That Sound?
Hey! Ain't nobody trying to hear that bullshit.
This is the segment where we do an analysis of horny and or problematic songs from yesteryear. Rodecca's got a song for us that me and Akua have apparently never heard of
before. You've never heard this song before. And it's so interesting because I realize it's a catalog of music that, like, because I had Valentine, my older sister, like, as my mom, basically, whatever she was listening to, I was listening to. So there's a lot of different things that I'm like, you know, a teenager or like a young adult around that time would be bumping to. That's what I know, but I was a little kid. So I was on Instagram, I was on TikTok. Somebody was dancing to the song. I was like, oh shit, I haven't heard this song in mad long. But then when you remember it, like what you were singing, you're like, oh shit, okay. I was wilding out, but anyway, I don't know. Should I sing it? I want y'all to see the lyrics.
Yeah, well, Sam, pull up the lyrics, and then I want you to serenade us with those vocals, Rodecca.
Did we say what the song was called, by the way?
The name of the song is Pussycat by Missy Elliott. I'm sorry. I'm sitting here like ready to go because I remember. Oh my gosh. All right. So it's the seventh track on her Under Construction album. I don't even know anything about Under Construction, but
is that the one that, like, what was on that? I can't stand.
Let's see.
Or was that Music Make You Lose Control?
No, that was definitely not Mute.
Work It was on there. So Work It, let me work it. I put my thing down, flip it. Yeah.
I was definitely listening to Missy Elliott at that time, but I was in fifth grade. So
okay, see, exactly. I was just saying we were young, but like we were definitely listening, but it's not like I was bumping her album or anything. But anyway, all right. So I know the chorus, so I'm going to sing the first thing. I don't know the first verse, so I'm going to just read it, but I'm going to sing the chorus.
All right? Okay.
It says, all for love, but there's more things that keep a man satisfied. I know the remedy just to cure him from cheating even if he tried. Okay. All right. So mm-hmm. It's, pussy don't fail me now. I got to turn this nigga out so he don't want nobody else but me and only me. Pussy don't fail me now. I gotta turn this nigga out so he don't want nobody else but me and only me. So I'm sitting here like, hey. And then I was like, oh my God.
Wow, son.
Not the conversation with your coochie, like, girl.
Don't fail me now, girl. It's so many levels of like, that is the chorus. That's it. There's no nuance. It's like, yo, come through.
Oh, no.
I got to make sure this man.
I have to read the second verse because I see the first line and I'm like, what?
I know he's a man and men have intentions to sleep with someone else. But that's why when I make love to him, I'm ruling, trying to give him my best. Hey. So this is like also like, yo, it don't matter how good your pussy is. If the man gonna cheat, he gonna cheat. So I don't know what this whole, like, we having a conversation with ourselves. She's okay with it. She's fine with it. Because she know if she does the job right, he won't do it.
And this I'm like, what is this? This is why gender roles have us all fucked up, no matter what gender we are. Because what? We're just assuming that this nigga's going to cheat. And we're assuming that the best way to deal with that is to give him bomb sex.
All the time.
Like, why are you having bomb sex with somebody who you think is going to cheat on you? Don't have sex with that nigga.
And it's a pep talk.
It's a pep talk. It's a pep, sis, that we gotta get in here, it's bitch.
Like, it's like how Issa Rae talked to Mirror Issa in Insecure. Yes. Like Missy Elliott has like a little handheld mirror.
Yeah, exactly. Yo,
to her vulva and was like, girl.
Yeah.
Don't fail me now.
We gotta keep this nigga. Okay. We gotta keep him.
Okay. And then, good. And then obvious this pussy don't fail me now with some echoing now. Now you bumping like, oh shit.
I'm done.
And then it's like, as long as the pussy good, it's all right. Ain't gotta worry about my man. Cause he know he's mine. He know mine's is one of a kind. And that's why he keeps staying. The pussy good, it's all right. Ain't gotta worry about my man because he knows mine's is one of a kind. And that's why he keeps staying.
Cool. I know you weren't here on this episode. I don't know if you listened to it, but remember how we did that 702 song, Rodeca?
Mm-hmm, I did.
Remember how I told you Missy Elliott wrote it?
Yo, Missy Elliott has doing some problematic ideas, yo.
Dang, Missy. And I love Missy. I didn't know this side.
She was doing some questionable shit.
Our faves are always problematic.
I think this next line, this next verse is Missy from a different perspective. Because it's distorted, but it says, look, ma, yeah, you got that bomb and work, that prissy stuff. Glad it ain't that gushy stuff. Wait, is that, okay, I don't know. I don't like the mushy butts. I wish we was like Puffy over Jennifer. Some lore, Puffy and Jennifer did date at one point in time, so I guess it's like a thing. Him and her, too much like I and we. And that, what that mean? We just love the booty. All we see in 3D is booty, 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 booty.
I don't think that,
no offense to your like dictation skills. I don't think that translated well.
At all.
I don't think it did either. I was like, I don't know what's at the last part. I don't remember that at all. I just remember that chorus and it popping and just jumping. About? I don't know.
I thought that gushy stuff was
that's
great.
That's what the gushy stuff was what people wanted.
That sweet, that nasty, that gushy stuff.
Exactly. I don't know.
I'm really confused by this. And what is mushy butts? Is that fat phobia?
I don't know. Oh, that's... Oh, man.
I don't understand what's going on.
I don't either. And I'm sorry that I brought this part here. This part, I don't know. I'd have to listen to it.
Is there more song after that? Oh, there is.
Oh, shit.
The second part is a response. So it's, oh, really? Do me, do me, do me, do me. Run through me like flood going through an ivy. That's good. I'm going to make sure you will never leave. Can I put my booty up on your spaghetti daddy? In your spaghetti daddy? Oh, shit.
Can I put my booty up in your spaghetti?
Yes, that's what it says. That's what it says.
I don't get that.
Are you ready for some cabby from me? Pussy, gushy, mushy. What more you want from me? Oh, damn. Because he's trying to edit her puss. And she's like, yo, I'm trying to do all the things. That's what I'm getting from that.
Okay.
Oh, wait, no, but she's talking to her look, I'm sorry, y'all. This part, I don't remember. So this whole rhetoric of talking back to and forth, it says, because my feelings hit the ceiling, what more you want me to be? Oh, please, pussy, don't mess it up for me. Come on.
Oh, wait, so was the distorted voice her pussy talking? I'm really confused. I'm sorry.
We don't even got to do this, y'all. I'm so sorry.
I don't understand what this song is about. I got it. Like, you had me in the first half.
And then it kept going, and I was like, oh shit, there's a whole other part of this song. See?
What's going on?
We gotta go listen. I'm gonna definitely go listen.
Yeah, unfortunately, we can't do that on the podcast.
No, we can't. But copyright, let me tell you, when you hear that chorus, it's gonna bump, and you're gonna be surprised at what she's saying, and you're still gonna bump.
We still gonna bump. Exactly.
Because it hit. But yeah, it's just really weird to think that, like, I knew the chorus verbatim, and this is something that I heard in 2003, which means I was 10, and I was.
Formative years.
Formative years. My pussy not failing, you know?
And look where we are now. Look where we are now.
I still can't get over booty up in your spaghetti.
I think that might just be genius messing it up. Oh, okay. Because, you know, sometimes they don't be
good. Her ass is in his dick.
Exactly.
Trying to get the logistics of it.
At least you thought of dick. I literally just thought of a plate of spaghetti and, like,
I thought of that first
it.
When I just saw spaghetti. Like, I thought it was, like, that witch shit.
Mm-hmm. Maybe your spaghetti's, like, your business or something. I don't know. I don't know. I just be making up shit to try and make it work, but I don't
know. I'm going to turn this segment into one in which I interview all of these artists about
what the fuck they were talking about. I have questions. Okay.
Listen, you were once quoted as saying,
put my booty up in your spaghetti, Dad.
Please tell me.
Explain what that means.
What was going on in your head when you were writing that?
Y'all stay tuned for Samantha's next projects, okay? Because she going to do it. It's one that thing she going to do.
That ass. Genius hire me, son. But only if you're paying right. All right, let's move the fuck on.
Yeah.
Let's go into some other nonsense, though, unfortunately. This is Fuck Is This?
Oh my God, what is that? Oh my God, what is that?
It is the segment in which we discuss, rant about, or laugh at the nonsense in the realm of sex, love, and dating. All right, more stuff that I don't get. This is the fucking Samantha Doesn't Understand podcast. All right, somebody give me a read.
I packed my ex-husband's lunch for 20 years. I wish the fuck I hadn't. He resented me for it. Don't do, ladies.
Huh?
Oh.
Hey, what are you talking about?
What?
Why did he resent you?
So I wanted to, like, ask you guys, like, what scenarios could be the case where, like, this has happened for 20 years and he resents her for it. Like, what is she?
She can't cook. She is.
I was about to say it has to be.
What do you make?
She is.
What do you make?
She is Paula Patton frying the chicken grease.
Oh, shit, with the fucking spices in the grease.
She can't cook, and that man was sick because he worked in a remote location where he couldn't go out for lunch and be able to eat. He couldn't get the Popeyes. That man was sick. Okay. But why would you let it go on for 20 years? You got but one day to pack me a bad lunch before I'm like, bitch.
Why didn't he just pack it himself?
Pack it yourself.
I don't understand.
It would have been a smooth conversation. I'm like, babe, I'm going to just take a quick peanut butter jelly, girl. And then,
does she think that this is like a generally applicable situation? Like everyone.
She's just like, old ladies, don't do this.
This nigga's going to end up resenting you. Why
That's
would
the
he
one
do
way to fail a marriage. The one way to fail a marriage is pack a dick and lunch. Oh, she explains it a little bit further down.
Oh, please read. Oh, man.
Oh, she did. Okay. I didn't see that part.
I was like, wait,
it only
what?
Got one retweet. I was committed to the ridiculousness.
Nobody cared about anything but the original thing. I was just like, all right.
All right, hey. Somebody read the reply.
So the reply is, said he didn't want to eat out fast food to save money. He would skip lunch. I didn't want him to not eat, so I'd pack food and he'd take it. At the end of the marriage, which I asked to end. Good thing she said that, because I thought he was divorcing her over that lunch. So he was mad that I made him pack lunch for decades. I was a stay-at-home mom for 10 years. Oh, this isn't, even with more context, it still seems like, why is he upset? He didn't want to eat out or have fast food to save money. He just really didn't want to eat.
That man says starve. Okay, I want to starve, and you are not allowing me. Like,
it sounds like you're not listening to me, and therefore, I hate you.
You're not.
I wouldn't take it, though.
You're not
That's
respecting
the thing. Like,
my wishes.
Yeah, I just wouldn't take it, though. I'd just leave it. I'd be like, hey, I don't want you to pack lunch for me. Like, here you go.
It sounds like less of the lunch and more of a boundaries issue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want you to baby me.
And
type
poor
thing.
Communication.
Mm-hmm. Just on it.
But like, y'all could have had a conversation. I literally
wasn't gone for 20.
The first week,
give me that fucking bag of lunch.
The first, and he leaving the house and throwing it out. Like, why we gotta do all of that?
Not me in fourth grade because I was embarrassed about my tuna fish sandwiches. Sorry, mom and dad. Yeah, that's what was happening. Maybe it was tuna fish a lot. And he didn't like how it smelled.
Maybe.
And he was embarrassed. And he had the emotional capacity of a 12-year-old. Okay. Let us go on into some other nonsense. Oh, yeah. This is the one that I want you guys to click on. So go ahead and click on it. And how about you describe to me what's happening? Watch it and then describe what's happening. Explain.
I don't know if I have words to explain that. Okay. I gotta give me a minute to formulate. So it is a TikTok of a video of a girl twerking. It looks like she works in a club. And she's also doing a voiceover of this. So I will, I'll describe the video and then the voiceover. So in the video, she is twerking, doing her thing, making her dollars. She turns around and some guy comes and like places his hands on her waist and he like whispers something in her ear. I don't know if he's trying to get by or what. And then she, I don't even know how to describe it. Somebody help me.
She's a pro wrestling move on this nigga. And drops her body down. When I first watched it without the video, without the sound, she just dropped and it looked like she was grabbing him with him. But it's very important to hear the voiceover to understand.
So then the voiceover goes,
when I tell niggas in the club, do not touch me, and they go touch me, and I'm like, hold up, who this? Oh, okay. Stogo Stunner!
I just love that.
It was fantastic.
I have no like analysis. I just think it's very funny. And I would want to do that. Yeah, I would.
Exactly. I was about to say that's something where like it's unexpected and it will make somebody hesitate about touching another person because you just don't know.
That's, I know, funny. Y'all are not wrestling niggas or former wrestling niggas like myself, but I'd be RKOing these niggas.
Are you serious?
I would.
Oh, okay.
I've never done that.
I was like, wow, no, that's interesting, Sam. That would be
that would be a lot.
That's why I said, this are video, you serious?
For that to just have come from my brain.
Yeah.
No, I'm definitely copying her. I'm definitely copying her. All right, let's move on to something else. Stone Cold Stunner. It was really funny the way she said it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not expecting it.
It wasn't expected at all. Just didn't think it was going to go like that. Okay. Here's our next thing. Maybe Rodeca read it this time since Cool explained the video.
The tweet is by Sunny Drip and it's, I feel like your quote unquote soulmate should be able to make you come. And then the shrugging emojis. Just intrinsically? Just automatically
just the person that known, okay. Yeah. Just has the keys and the pin. And you know, that's weird because I consider my friends my soulmates. Don't know none of y'all know how to make me come. So I guess we really are.
You
not.
Don't know until you know, nigga. No, I'm kidding. But yeah.
Like, I think we put too much expectations on people. Why? Why would, like, okay, I expect by the time we've decided to make a lifelong commitment, you know how to make me come, because then we got to reevaluate things, you know?
Yeah.
But if I meet you, if I just met you and this is our first sexual encounter, honey.
Which, admittedly, that could be the path that they're going down. They'd have some tweets after, but I didn't care that much. Okay. I did read, though, like people. So when I first saw this tweet, this was actually tweeted March 21st of 2022. And I'm going to talk about this book a little bit later. But I was listening to Ace, the audiobook, which is a book about asexuality and aromanticism, more so about asexuality, but also touches on aromanticism. And I was like, I thought of you, Akua, and how you say like your friends are your soulmates. And I thought it was just like very... It was a very allosexual take on relationships and what soulmates mean.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you have like made a lifelong commitment to someone, whether that be romantic or non-romantic, it doesn't have to involve sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw the quote tweets, I saw a lot of people being like, hey, this just like completely erases asexual people and stuff like that. And I believe it was the person who retweeted it, but maybe it was other people just being like, obviously we're not talking about y'all. But it's like, it's not obvious, one. And then two, because you're not talking about people, like you're further stigmatizing and like making it abnormal to be asexual. So that was my take on it.
I just don't like blanket statements like people should be able to just do things. And I'm like,
that's
that,
like,
that just, it's just like so much pressure.
It's like, if you ever saw a plane, you should be able to fly one.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think that also, that even if we're not specifically talking about, like if your partner is ace or something like that, I still think it's the normalization of sexuality or the like compulsory sexuality, which is actually something that the author talks about in the book, that has that expectation anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like just because you are bonding with someone on a romantic level means that they should be able to make you do all of these things sexually and immediately. Mm-hmm. And if they can't, then something's wrong inherently with the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Stone Cold Stunner. Okay. Right. Let's move on to something else. Oh, okay. This is Rodeca's favorite thing.
It's just so amusing to me.
Okay. All right, Akua, how about you read this one this time?
Okie dokie. Okay, so this is a tweet by ArielX1_. And it says, living in NYC is crazy because why did the plug add estrogen for trans women to his menu? Laughing my ass off. I just wanted a vape. I want to read the menu. So it is, this is all in Spanish. I'm going to read it in what I assume is English because my Spanish is not that good. But it looks like progesterone from Mexico, $50. I don't know what that is. Samantha, help.
Norresterona estradiol.
Yes. $50. Depo-Vera from Bangkok, $60. Perludil Algestona from Mexico, $50. Progesterone, 50 milligrams, 2 cc from Mexico. I think that says $70. It could be seven.
You gotta put the low, nigga. Oh, wow.
And Gravidinota, 250 milligrams milkshake.
Is that right? I didn't even know that.
From Mexico.
Yeah, that's cool.
I love it.
Wait, does it? I wonder, like, does it come in milkshakes or, like, is that, like, the edible version of, like, hormones?
Exactly. That's what I think. Okay. I think it's the edible version of it. Cool. As a person who frequently partakes in things, I too reach out to plugs in New York City, and the menus have gotten so much more extensive. Like before, it used to be like this nervous thing where you're like, oh, can I get something right? Now it's like, yo, you hit them up, it's a whole list, like a whole thing, like in categories. I have people who use like little emojis as like ways to identify. I'm like, oh, what's this? And like, yeah, the legend's on the bottom. I'm like, it's mess. So this feels like a natural next step. I'm not even surprised. If anything, I'm like, yo, he got stuff from Mexico, Bangkok? Like, where he getting all this stuff from? But, you know, hey, if you need it. And at one point in time, I think I saw, don't get me wrong, and I don't condone this, but I'm pretty sure I saw like some like COVID like vaccines that they were
You about that. I've seen screenshots of that. I don't partake in the astronaut activities, but I was, it's just, if that was real.
The plug is giving COVID vaccines.
At one point in time, when I heard of it.
Oh wait, I've seen the test. Just kidding, I've not seen the vaccines. I don't think that.
I saw something like asking about COVID stuff, right? And I was like, "What's that?" Nah, you don't understand. It's the underground out here has got
no. Rebecca, I need an answer. The plug is giving out COVID vaccines.
This is, I don't remember. I don't remember exactly. I know it was either the vaccine. It is wildly different. So it's either the vaccine or a card or it wasn't a test.
Okay.
It was either vaccine or a card.
Okay.
But it was definitely something like, ask me about like my COVID stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, please don't be the vaccine. Yeah. I do not recommend.
Don't give me that either, yo.
It's free.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's odd, right? Yeah.
So it may more than likely.
And I also don't condone
it's supposed to get a card.
I don't condone the card, but more than likely it's the card.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was like all for it because like, but yeah, we're seeing like this wave of fucking anti-trans legislation, like locking people out of healthcare. And also the Depo-Vera, that's like birth control, right? That's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. So they're also giving out birth control. And then we're also.
Well, I don't know how else, because medications can have an intended person of. Intended purpose, and then physicians also find that it works for something else. So I don't know what it happens when it's given to trans people, but I do know Depo-Vera as a birth control for cis women.
I was trying to look it up really fast, but I don't know. Valid though. Either way, it can be used for both. Mm-hmm. If it is used for also trans people. So I just think that that's cool because we're also seeing like it's not happening yet or anything like that. But like you got to follow the trajectories and we are fucking spiraling into a dystopia. It's already a dystopia. We're spiraling further into a dystopia. So like I could see a world very much where like now plugs sell abortion pills and stuff like that for people mm-hmm. who can't access that in their state. So it's cool that this is happening in New York City, but like people do have access to these things in New York City more than they have access to these things in other states. Not saying like they have complete access or like the copay isn't wild crazy or anything like that, or wild expensive rather. But yeah, I would just like to see this worldwide.
I'm on the fence. I'm here for the accessibility, but I worry about people medicating themselves. Like And I remember very loosely, so don't quote me, a conversation on Marsha's plate about back alley getting your hormones, you know, and that someone was like dosing themselves too high or too low. And I don't, you know, I don't know what that looks like for a person without medical supervision and what the health risk can, you know, could be. I know people are already doing it, you know, and but, you know, that's my concern. Like, I definitely want, I agree with the accessibility and people needing to get the affirming care that they need by any means necessary. But we're not scientists. We're not medical physicians. And you can do harm to yourself without knowing. So really, the government needs to get this shit to fuck together is what I need. Yeah. The medical system.
I agree with what you're saying. And I want to like do that like blanket statement, like we're not condoning or advising you to do these things. Like, this is your choice, like a cover your ass type statement.
Yeah.
However, the government in a capitalist society is never actually going to serve the health needs of people. So like that whole like keep making the system work, it's just like not going to work because it's like in opposition to what the people need and want. So like I think that we can, like, how did science exist? It's not like the government was like, oh, you can do science, I'm gonna give you a science degree. Like, niggas just figured shit out. And I think that, like, I think it's more likely to see a world where people talk to each other. And even, like, people who are in the healthcare industry but are, like, don't fuck with this fucking capitalist medical industry shit, like, give people the resources to know how to dose themselves properly. Like, that's the trajectory that I see things going in.
I would like for the plug, people to still have access to the plug, but then maybe, like, for the, like a doctor's group that has like a infographic or a PDF that it's like, hey, this is how you do this.
They do be having infographics too.
This is how you do this. And then like, maybe the plug has that PDF. What, when you sell him the, when he sells you what you need, he's like, also click this link, scan this code.
Yeah. Yeah. But then also like, and this is not a, not a broad sweeping statement on all drug dealers or anything like that. And I think like people have to fit in where they can get in a society where they can't find opportunities. But the plug is also like in capitalism and is trying to like fucking profit at all costs. Like, you're not inherently like a
better
or an ally to like public health because you're selling fake fucking COVID ID cards. So yeah. So I don't know if it's even in the end, for every plug, is it worth it to give the correct dosage if it makes you more money to sell the improper dosage, for example? And it's like a lot of plugs like, oh yeah, I don't want to fucking sell fentanyl because like that's going to kill the people who buy my products. And in the end, like, I'm not going to be able to profit. A lot of people just do sell that shit.
Yeah, they don't care.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know.
What a world.
No conclusive takes on that one.
Just think got a little rough. It was real. So that's what I was like, dang.
It definitely did get real. All right, let's move on. If you love this show, you know what else you might like? Insightful thoughts, commentary, and introspection into things like self-love, compulsory heterosexuality, and body image. You can find all of that in a written series penned by our coho Rob exclusively on our Patreon. For the low, low of $2 a month, you can support your favorite queer, Black, feminist-led sex podcast and have access to weekly content, hangouts, and resources we put up on our Patreon. If you're not down with that and still want to monetarily support, hit our PayPal. Links to both Patreon and PayPal are in the show notes. Let's get into our current events segment. Today, what are we talking about, Rebecca?
We're talking about female mice, specifically in science, and how it gave birth, or one gave birth recently without sex or a sperm. So the title is Female Mouse Gives Birth Without Sex or Sperm by Nuno Dominguez, and it was written on March 9th, 2022. So Chinese scientists have managed to get a female mouse to produce live viable offspring from an unfertilized egg thanks to gene editing. So this is the first time that this has happened with a mammal to achieve asexual reproduction. It's technically known as parthenogenesis.
Sounds right to me.
Yeah. Okay. Ooh. Okay. Or virgin creation, which is commonly in many insects and reptiles, and even some bird species. But until very recently, it was believed that mammals could not reproduce without male genetic material. So in 2004, this actually happened. Like a version of this happened before. The world learned about Kaguya, a mouse born without the need for sperm or sexual reproduction. So mammals have two copies of each gene in their genome, one from their mother, one from their father. When a sperm penetrates an egg, something called genomic imprinting happens, meaning that some genes behave differently depending on whether they were inherited from their father or their mother. Many of the genes involved in the process have to do with growth, might be for evolutionary reasons, that the father's imprint favors growth in order to have larger offspring, while the mothers may do the opposite to ensure that the pregnancy can be brought to term. Some of these genes are associated with a greater risk of suffering cancer, among other diseases. The Japanese scientists who created Kaguya used two eggs. One worked as the real egg, while the other imitated the sperm's contribution. The result was a baby that was born to two females. So that's what happened in 2004. And that was the only time that they like were able to bring it to term. And that's like how people learned about this process in the first place. But there's a new study led by Yangqing Wei, a reproductive medicine researcher at Renji Hospital in Shanghai. And they took the concept a step further by creating a pregnancy from a single unfertilized egg. So Chinese used a gene editing technique very similar to CRISPR, which we've talked about on the show before because we love science in this bitch. It's used in medicine and biotechnology. The authors of the study used the tool to imitate the genomic imprint in seven different points of genome of an egg that had already had two copies of each gene. This triggered a biochemical process that was the equivalent of fertilization. The egg grew from one single cell to 140-cell blastocyst. The scientists implanted 192 embryos made with this technique in as many female mice, but only one of them gave birth to a single healthy pup that survived, although it weighed less than average. Two others died shortly after birth. The survivor reached adulthood and was able to reproduce normally. So
there you go, y'all.
Science. Yeah, but yeah. In their study published in the scientific journal PNAS, researchers noted that parthenogenesis can be achieved by targeted epigenetic rewriting of multiple critical imprinted control regions. Basically, the team believes that the technique can be perfected to achieve a higher live birth success rate. So the study is considered groundbreaking, according to Luis Montolio, a researcher at Spain's National Research Council, which is CSIC, who underscored that the eggs had a copy of their genes and another copy taken from another egg that came from a completely different species of mouse, allowing scientists to check the effects of the editing. In theory, at least, further perfecting this technique might allow women to have children on their own, but researchers add that its use on humans are a very long way off. The main thing now is to follow the lives of these mouse born through these techniques and see whether they have problem with their lives and reproduction. There's still a lot of unanswered questions. They've managed something fascinating but terribly inefficient, adds David Haig. I love when it's always like a quote from somebody who's just like, yeah, we're doing all right, but like chill, we're not there yet. A researcher at Harvard University who developed a theory about genomic imprinting 7 years ago. But yeah, you know, we out here sciencing and stuff. We're doing different things. And I love anything that feels like it's a way forward. And I try so hard not to think about the ways that people can just like corrupt it. But like, it's a hope.
I didn't even think about taking this to humans. My thought immediately went to like animals on the verge of like extinction. And like creating biodiversity. Oh, wow. Niggas was like, fuck all that. What? How can we do this for humans? Like animals is dying every day.
Well, like, is that their goal or is that just like what the journalist asked them? Like, when can we
might have been. Yeah. But yeah, that's where my brain thought of like maintaining biodiversity and helping the animals.
That's a very cool thought.
I think for like same-sex couples particularly, it would be kind of cool to be like not getting anybody involved, and it's just like we can have our baby, you know, especially for people who like have to go through, there's a lot of different ways that for people, especially lesbians who just like have to deal with sperm or dealing with that whole extra, sometimes it costs money, sometimes you have to ask a friend, da 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 da. And if it could just be both of y'all having your baby, that'd be really nice, I think.
So this is funny because me and a friend of mine always said that, you know, if we weren't married by a certain age, we would get married and we would have kids. And
what is that age?
It was 30, but now we pushing it to 40 because 30 here, we like, girl.
It's right around the corner. Girl.
Because 30 here.
Like, are we keeping up hope or do I got to propose by December? What we doing? Like, because... and she was always like, Akua, how is that gonna happen? I was like, I don't know. I got DNA, you got DNA, they gonna figure it out. They figured it out, my nigga.
I'm dead. Just in the nick of time.
Okay, I'm here working on it.
One thing I do have a question about, and I'm not sure if you said this already, but like, is this evolutionarily sound? Like, because, you know, like with like two parents or whatever, you have the two different genomes and better adapted to the environment because you have like more shit from different people. Like, is this, does this make that worse?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a long, I feel like they even acknowledge that there's a part of evolution that like plays a part so that it could be bigger and stronger. And like, I feel like they haven't really gotten down to the point where they're like, using it in the same way that nature would, or like making sure they're selecting things in the same way that nature would. It just seems like very much in the spirit of experimentation for experimentation's sake, especially when I read that like they're like, oh, we just took it from this mouse and we put it from this mouse, and like I don't think that would normally happen, or it would be very rare for that to happen. And they're just like, we're just gonna smash these two together. So yeah, I don't know if they're being sound or really like thinking about it in terms of just like the way that the natural order of things has been going on. And now I think it's just all like, fuck it, we're just going to try and do what we got to do. But I hope they do take that in consideration, because we just don't know what the eventual consequences of that could be.
Well, from what you said, it seems like they're kind of thinking about that, because they wanted to see the surviving, like the surviving mouse did grow into adulthood, and then that mouse reproduced and it seemed like everything was okay. Like at least that mouse can reproduce. But yeah, in terms of like immune system and like all those other intricacies, I don't know. It doesn't sound like they've looked into that yet. Go ahead, Samantha. Add your consultations, girl.
Okay. Well, thank you for that bit of science this lovely morning, Rebecca. All right, let's move on to Ask Media.
Ask to media, I wanna see you watching Ask to media. I wanna see you reading Ask to media. I wanna see you giving Ask to media.
This is a segment where we give book, TV, podcast, film reviews that relate to sex, love, dating, and or gender. They are typically spoiler-free reviews. Today, I'm going to do a quick hit on a book called Ace, What Asexuality Reveals About Desire, Society, and the Meaning of Sex by Angela Chen. Anybody ever heard of this book?
No.
No.
But I'm going to go buy it now.
Yeah. It's good, and you can rent it at the library as an audiobook. Yeah, so I listened to this as an audiobook a few weeks ago. Overall, I enjoyed it, and I would recommend it to anyone looking to learn slash think about what the title says, like what asexuality reveals about our society and stuff. I have some positive and constructive takeaways, and I'll just let you know them. So first of all, I really appreciated the section about a mononormativity, which is actually like, I think I said compulsory romanticism in the top of the show. It's not an actual term, but I knew that nobody would know what a mononormativity would mean. But that's like the normalization of romanticism and expecting everyone to be romantic. And I should just read the definition. It's a set of societal assumptions that everyone prospers with an exclusive romantic relationship.
Got
so
it.
That was a really good informative chapter about Aro people in general, who I think are like a little bit less talked about than Ace people, in my opinion. And then also, I think it was a really good interrogation about how a mononormativity is harmful to our society in general. So things like, why can't you give your parents health care? Why can't you give your kid your pension? And then just in general, the lack of senior care in our society and how that excludes aromantic and non-partnered people.
Wow.
it has a really good chapter on consent that made me think about a lot of things. So I'll do a quick trigger content warning for sexual assault. Not getting into detail or anything like that, but I'm going to talk about it. So she talks about the idea of hermeneutical injustice. Has anybody ever heard of that?
No.
Okay, so it's like a part of like epistemology.
Episcopalian?
No, not Episcopalian.
Okay. So I was like, what?
Epistemology, which is like the study of information and knowledge and shit like that. So funny.
Episcopalian. The study of information. That's what I heard. I was like, you can't say Episcopalian. What's happening?
Anyway, hermeneutical injustice, long story short, is when someone of a marginalized group doesn't have access to knowledge about their identity because they are unrepresented in scholarship and journalism. And that lack of knowledge about themselves or other people's lack of knowledge about their marginalized identity, like, leads to an injustice occurring. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's hard for them to name it because they didn't know, type thing. Mm-hmm. So she talks about how this applies to the idea that some ACE people will feel bad and disgusted and guilty for saying yes to a sexual encounter when they didn't exactly want to have it. But they didn't know that being ace was a thing and not wanting to have sex is fine. Akua, did you want to chime in?
Definitely. That resonated really hard in thinking about ways that I had felt guilty and like shamed myself for engaging in sexual encounters that I knew I didn't want to do, but didn't really know why I didn't want to do them. And now I know because I'm demisexual.
So that was a hermeneutical injustice, and I'm very sorry. So I'm not ace, but this made me think about a time when I was younger, before this podcast and before therapy, when I would like trudge through sexual encounters, even when I was like triggered because like of a past sexual assault. And I thought that it was weird to be assaulted, which is like, that's just some fucked up shit. I thought that was weird. And I thought it was weird. Like, I thought that I was going to live my whole life always like having that come up, mm-hmm. and that it was weird to not have sexual desire at some points. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, this is bad. So let me just like go through with this because it's abnormal to be this way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this book and just like, well, this book was like nowhere near being written at that time, but even just like education in like the piss poor fucking sex education that we got that talked about like, it's fine for your desire to be low at times. And it's mm-hmm. definitely fine for that to be the case if you're triggered, would like have not let me go through that. Yeah. And having gone through that, like, because I was thinking about this last night when I was writing these notes, it wasn't even the assault that triggered me. It was like thinking about the fact that I trudged through despite mm-hmm. like my better instincts. I was just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And I was like feeling so bad about myself. Mm-hmm. So like, that's like the type of ways that this book really like it covers everybody, mm-hmm. even if you're not asexual. Like, you can definitely apply it to like different things in your life where it was just like, compulsory sexuality was just like fucking us all up as people. I really appreciated how she frames asexuality. So she says two things, and it might be like a slight misquote because I was listening to the audiobook, but she says it's an umbrella, not a straight line from ace to aloe with demi in the middle. Like, demi is not in the middle and it's not a straight line. And she also says that nobody is trapped. Nobody has to pledge their allegiance. The words are gifts. So like, knowing you're asexual is not like, oh, I'm going to be asexual forever, anything like that, or I have to do this because I'm asexual. It's just like a thing that helps you explain what you're feeling and how you're navigating the world, which I really appreciated.
Yeah, I like that.
And in general, the book does a good job of letting all people exist. So, for example, not all aces are survivors of assault or as the result of assault, but some people can be, and that's okay. Another example, disabled does not equal asexual, but some aces are disabled and aren't sure how those two identities reinforce one another, if at all, and that's also okay. Some criticism, and the author, like, says this at the beginning of the book, I think in like the preface or something like that. She says that the book is written for a particular socioeconomic perspective. So like middle class, like she's Asian, but I think it was like a middle class kind of like white adjacent type socioeconomic perspective. So I don't think that that's a bad thing. And she did bring in different racial and socioeconomic perspectives in some parts. But like, to me, it kind of felt like, okay, like, no shit. Yeah, I know like Black women are like over sexualized and stuff like that. Like, I need you to go like a little bit deeper because it just feels like you're talking to second wave white feminists. And mm-hmm. I don't identify with that. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's fine. It's just like, I don't need those parts. But, and for folks who don't know, we were recently featured on a podcast called Truth Be Told, hosted by Tanya Mosley. And the whole episode was about sexuality. So we were in it. Our friend Evian Whitney was in it. And then also Tanya interviewed Sharonda J. Brown. And this is how I heard about this book. So Sharonda J. Brown is writing a book called Refusing Compulsory Sexuality, A Black Asexual Lens on Our Sex-Obsessed Culture. And it's going to be released in September of this year. So I'm definitely looking forward to reading that as kind of like a continuation. Yeah, as a continuation of this book. But yeah, overall, I'd recommend it.
This just reinforced what I've been thinking about doing, which is just like, I need to start reading things that like, I assume don't apply to me. And I'm just like, oh, I'm not going to read this nonfiction book. But I'm like, it provides such a worldly perspective to like read things that may not necessarily apply to you, only for it to like, you find things in it where you're like, yeah, no, this definitely relates. And I can like have a better understanding of so many different perspectives, including my own. Especially when you mentioned hermeneutical injustice. I feel like even in like so many things that, without the internet and stuff like that, like we didn't feel represented in, and like even just like being able to see yourself in certain things and not having that knowledge kind of like affects so much. And it's weird to think, not weird, but I think now because I have not that much representation, but I see so much more representation, I forget that there's still many, many, many people who just do not see themselves being represented in any way. So yeah, I didn't even know there was a name for that. So I'm just like, wow, there's a word for everything, isn't there? But I was going off about onomatopoeia the other day. I was just like, someone just went hard for no reason. Both for...
That's mad funny. Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm sorry. Yeah, so that's how my brain works. I was just like, yeah, because it's just like somebody just threw a whole bunch of vowels in there, but they, like the word goes hard. So yeah, it's cool that like there's a word for that, and like it's something that people are aware of and like actively fighting against. So yeah. This is dope. Yeah.
I am trying to figure out how I'm going to listen to this book.
I have a whatchamacallit. I have a Brooklyn Library card, and it was on the Brooklyn Public Library. So like you can get that online or whatever. You don't even have to go to a thingy in Brooklyn or whatever. And then there's an app that you download called Libby, and it has that library's catalog of books, and you just rent it.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, let's go on to our last segment for the day.
Grandma! Yeah. Are you a hoe?
It is called Fuck You. It's a segment where we talk about your sex love and or dating lives, and we read your listener letters and sometimes listen to your voicemails. This is a letter from Anonymous, and it is in response to our episode from last year called 50 Fine and Fuckin'. Anonymous writes, "Hey, I'm so excited to back listen to the rest of the podcast and support in any way possible. This episode resonated with me in so many ways, from being a teen mother to seeing Melissa as the wise mother that I try to be." I'll put the episode in the show notes for folks who haven't listened to it, by the way. What triggered this write-in was the question about parenting and how they guide conversations with adult children. I've been talking to my son about sex since he was old enough to talk. I had him at 15 and identified quite early that so much of the shenanigans that I had got into were because of a lack of communication and information. While my son is one of the best parts of my life, he would not be here if it were for me being able to discuss contraception with my mother. If I were able to discuss sex with my mother, or even if I would have known more about abortion, which was offered while I was pregnant with him. I've been so frank with him about it all. It has paid off. When he started having wet dreams, quote unquote, he told me. I knew before he had sex. At 18, he is still childless and plans to be until he is stable. I have two other daughters. I am talking to my 10-year-old about so much of this already. I have very technical conversations with them. Some are needed for their own protection. I am also a child sex abuse survivor, so making sure they knew appropriate touch was important to me. Masturbation is a part of those conversations as well. My son and I never go into detail about his experiences, but for his entire life, we've addressed consent, and it does not only involve sex. I was able to have a conversation around sex and his fear of underperformance to pull him from a toxic relationship. People view sex as taboo, but it's how we got here. Most of us. This is going to end abruptly because I could go on and on, but I just felt like I needed to reach out. This is amazing work you all are doing. Feel free to reach out with other questions or concerns. Thank you for writing in. Yeah.
Thank you. Kudos to the, I'm sorry, their name. It was Anonymous, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're going to call you, kudos to you. I'm not going to give you a name. And having conversations with your child, I definitely, there are some things that just for my own, it's really my own discomfort that I can't.
You still not having these conversations with Dave?
I tell you, I be trying. There's some things that's like, oh, I got this. And there's some things I'm like, I'm going to need you to book an appointment with Samantha. And just have fun. She'll give you the information you need to know.
It's a process.
But I think, I don't know. I think, I wasn't prepared to like talk about the actual mechanics of sex. I think I am now, but he ain't asked because he knows I'm ready. He does it just to put me on edge. I swear to y'all, he be playing me.
He's like, oh, she ready now? I'm gonna wait. Nah. I'm gonna wait till she gets uncomfortable again.
Kudos to you for creating such a sex positive environment for your kids. And, open communication, because I definitely agree with that sentiment. If I wasn't raised in a Catholic family that actually talked about sex and talked about abortion, though I love my son, he probably wouldn't be here either.
From an opposite perspective, for like the majority of my life, I wasn't able to talk about that, about anything sexual. But then when I started having sex, I was able to have those conversations. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like definitely being able to have like less of a stigma around things, especially like your family talking to you, it feels really good. I don't know if there's a content warning, but like when I had to have my abortion, it wasn't a fun experience at all. It was like, why would it be fun? But I meant more like there was so much shame around it. And so much, it took everything for me to actually do it, because if it was anything for my family, or if I didn't do the research or find out myself, or like talk to people that I knew outside of my family, I'd probably have a kid, because it's just like my family was not helpful or supportive in any way about me getting an abortion. I don't know if y'all knew that, but yeah, they definitely, oh yeah, I think I told you. Yeah. So it was just difficult. And I think to myself how important it is for at home education to start things. It makes such a huge difference. I know I would have made so many different decisions if I was able to have these conversations. So it's nice to see like the future of parenting, even if it's just this one instance where it's just like, all right, there's some light here and people are like having these conversations, and hopefully, you know, it leads to just in general wide sweep of people just being more aware of things that they can do or options that they have, or, you know, feeling like destigmatization of so much stuff that, you know, this is nice to read. I'm like, oh, this is just good stuff. We're just doing what we got to do. I don't know. I assume that if I were to ever be a parent, I would be the same way. I don't know. I feel like I'd be I'd be nervous. I'd be like, look, I don't know. You ask me so much.
There's an idea of me as a parent, then there's me as a parent. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm ready for these conversations. I'm like, wait a minute. The discomfort really comes in kind of unpacking that. You know, I have time and space to unpack that in therapy. I've had time and space to unpack that with you guys, and kind of working to unlearn things that I learned, you know.
You're doing a good job.
You are.
Don't beat yourself up over it.
Trying.
I mean, the fact that you're trying is like, that's doing a good job. Yeah, like you feel the anxiety around it because you care.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate it. Everything that you wrote in anonymous, and yeah.
Thank you.
I hope all the parents are out there are modeling good conversations with their kids about it. Because as we said, sex education in these schools, not very good.
Not good.
Not very good.
Not good at all.
All right. Is that a show?
That's a show.
Nice. If this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. And let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate all of you.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Innerhole Uprising without the G on Twitter, Innerhole Uprising on Instagram and Facebook, and you can head to innerholeuprising.com to pay a hoe or to cop some merch. And if you would like to follow me specifically, my name is Rebecca, sometimes Rodecca, depends on where you know me from, at The Darkest Timeline on Instagram, and yeah.
I'm Slam Red on Instagram and Twitter.
And I'm Hey A Cool Girl on Instagram.
Enjoy. All right. Have a lovely motherfucking week, because you deserve to. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.